Alabama continues to dominate college football, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are for real, and a sit-down with Austin Space. La Valley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the La Valley Sports Talk podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris La Valley. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. Let's do a college football week 5 recap. Oregon is officially out of the college football playoff picture. They lost to Stanford in overtime 31-24. Oregon absolutely blew this game. They were leading by a touchdown with under 2 minutes remaining. And like I just said at the top, this is very likely eliminating them and the Pac-12 with any hope of making it to the college football playoff. Look, the Pac-12 schedule just isn't strong enough. If Oregon had gone undefeated, that would be a different story because they are a top five conference in college football. However, if you just look at the strength of schedule with all the other conferences, the Pac-12 never really lives up to the billing. So Oregon, and like I said, the Pac-12's hopes of getting to the college football playoff are now completely shot. Cincinnati put it on Notre Dame in South Bend 24-13. Cincinnati has been flying under the radar all season. They're now the fifth-ranked team in the country. They are in the ACC, and Notre Dame is likely their only ranked opponent this season. And what that means for Cincinnati is, although they're undefeated, and although they might be undefeated because they have a relatively easy schedule the rest of the way, similar to the Pac-12, without North Carolina or Clemson being any good in the ACC this year, it kind of takes the ACC out of question again in the national playoff picture. This is why there's so many people who want the college football playoffs to be expanded, because you only get 4 slots. And very likely, again, the committee members who do vote, who make the decisions, are going to go with strength of schedule when it comes to conferences. So what it's going to come down to, very likely, is you're going to look at, they're going to get 2 SEC teams in there. There's going to be at least 1 Big Ten team and likely a Big 12 team. I just don't see Cincinnati having enough of a strength of schedule the rest of the way to be able to usurp really anybody in the Big Ten. If anybody in the Big Ten goes undefeated, it's an automatic bid because they're going to win the Big Ten championship. That's going to be an automatic bid. The SEC champion is going to be Alabama. You already know Alabama is going to be one of those slots. So that leaves 2 slots left. Very likely Georgia. If Georgia only has 1 loss on the season, when it's all said and done, I'm going to touch on Georgia in a second. If Georgia only has 1 loss on the season, they're going to be the other SEC team, because very likely it's looking like it's going to turn into Bama-Georgia for the SEC title game. And if that's Georgia's only loss, Georgia will probably be in. So that leaves 1 slot left. If Oklahoma goes undefeated in the Big 12, they're probably going to make that 4 slot. Again, we don't know. I mean, Oklahoma hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire. They're not as good as everyone thought they'd be. But that's probably where we're looking at 4 slots. Again, I just don't see Cincinnati. Cincinnati's best game, honestly, has been Notre Dame. That's been their toughest opponent so far this season. And yeah, they dominated them 24-13. Nothing against Cincinnati. But they don't have the name recognition. And B, they just don't have the strength of schedule. Anyway, moving on. Bama embarrassed Ole Miss 42-21. And don't let the final score fool you. This was never a game. Bama led 28-0 at halftime. Each week, Bama continues to prove that they're easily the best team in college football. Bryce Young, who is Bama's QB, is likely the Heisman favorite. At least he's my Heisman favorite. So far this season, he's thrown for 1,365 yards, 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He's got an 88.9 QBR. The kid's fantastic. I don't know of another quarterback that's even close to playing as dominantly as Bryce Young has played all season long. So Bama, once again, just continues to be the creme de la creme of college football. So then if we move to the games to watch this week, I've got 2 games for you. Georgia versus Auburn. Georgia's coming off a massive blowout win against the one-time surging Razorbacks. They throttled Arkansas 37-0. I mean, that game wasn't even close. Everybody was hyped about that game. Georgia put it on them, and it was an embarrassing loss for the Razorbacks. Now, Auburn hasn't been great this season, and to be honest with you, they're 18th ranked in the country. I just don't think they have a shot against Georgia. Georgia is really, really good. Now, I started off college football this season saying that Clemson was going to beat Georgia in the first week. That obviously didn't happen. Georgia has never been able to really get over that hump. And this may be the year. Now, the hump being Alabama. Now, do I think Georgia is a better team than Alabama? I don't. As I just said, I think Alabama is the creme de la creme. However, Georgia, I think, is the closest thing to it. Georgia is now the second-ranked team in the country. I mean, Georgia's, they're really, really good. And with Florida losing, too, by the way, this past week, it's really Georgia and Alabama. I mean, that's your, they should be your top two teams. Before, I was questioning if Florida was better than Georgia just because of how well Florida played against Bama a couple weeks ago. But with Florida's loss, Georgia easily usurps them. And I like this Georgia team a lot. I think they're going to beat Auburn, by the way, by at least 10 points. And then the other game is a massive Big Ten showdown. It's Penn State, which is the fourth-ranked team in the country, against Iowa, which is the third-ranked team in the country. The winner of this game will be the front-runner to represent the Big Ten in the college football playoff picture, at least right now anyway. Obviously, you know, I'm trying not to do. I was listening to Ryan Nocilla's podcast the other day, and he was talking about how we all – when it comes to college football, everyone who's a college football fan keeps projecting what the college football playoffs are going to be. Like, we need to sit back and kind of relax a little bit. And I have done it every single week on this podcast. I keep telling you who I think is going to get in, and I'm going to keep doing it because I've already started that train and I'm just not going to get off the tracks at this point. But he is right. I mean, every week, this has been one of the more turbulent seasons in college football, which makes it one of the more exciting seasons of college football. But anyway, the winner of this game will remain undefeated and will be the front runner, like I just said, for the Big Ten representation. I like Penn State in this game. Penn State has been, I think, the third best team in the country all season, behind Georgia and behind Bama. I think Penn State has just been that good. They've beaten Wisconsin and Auburn so far this season. Iowa hasn't beaten a ranked opponent yet. I would take Penn State. I know they're on the road, but I would take Penn State by double digits in this football game. And before we get to the NFL, I just have one quick little rant. I said it on the latest episode of Spaceball. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's titled 2021 Playoff Predictions. It's wherever you get your podcasts. I looked at Austin straight in the camera, and I said the Red Sox are going to win this wild card game. He told me the Yankees were going to win the wild card game and that the Yankees were going to beat the Tampa Bay Rays in the ALDS. So Austin is dead wrong about his predictions. Not that he's upset about being dead wrong in his predictions. And I looked him straight in the face and I said, I swear to God, man, you're jinxing me right now. I know what you're doing. And he's like, no, man, I think the Yankees are going to win this baseball game. Now, I went into this completely aware of the fact that I didn't trust this Yankees team, that I knew that they weren't going to win this baseball game. In my heart of hearts, I had a sinking feeling that we were not going to beat the Red Sox in Fenway Park. With that being said, I did not expect them to embarrass themselves in this baseball game. I expected the Red Sox to win a close game. I figured it would be something to the effect of like a 3-2, 4-3 type of baseball game. I expected it to be close. I expected it to be a great game throughout. The Yankees were out of the game in the third inning. You pay Gerrit Cole the highest paid contract for a starting pitcher in baseball, you give him the best contract in baseball, and he can't even get through three innings. Now, this isn't on the Yankees as a whole right now. This is strictly on Gerrit Cole. What the fuck, dude? You can't get through three innings. You're our ace. You were my pick to win the Cy Young. I look like an idiot now. My pick to win the Cy Young. This is the reason why you're paid the money that you're paid. You're supposed to win games like these, or at least get a no decision and keep the game freaking close. You can't even get through three innings. Three innings, dude. You give up three runs in embarrassing fashion. I mean, this team sucks. I am like, on one end, I am pissed that we lost the game in the manner that we did, because it was an embarrassment. I'm sorry. It was a complete and utter embarrassment. We lost the game in the manner that we did. That's number one. Number two, though, on the other end, I'm also kind of relieved that the season's over, because this team has pissed me off all season long. I've been on this podcast numerous times ranting about this team, and I promise you this rant's going to be really close because there's a lot to talk about in the NFL this week. But this is my closing soliloquy about the Yankees. This team sucks. I'm happy the season's over. I'm pissed that now I have to listen to Red Sox fans for the next 6 months about how they beat us in a wild card game, even though they're about to get trounced by the Rays in the ALDS. So at least I'll get a little bit of satisfaction out of that one. But the season is over. I pray on everything that I can possibly pray on and all the baseball gods that we fire our bum of a manager. I know we're not going to get rid of Brian Cashman. That's not going to happen. But I hope that we can at least be a little self-reflective and a little more in tune with ourselves in the Yankees front office, and actually find a way to put together a winning formula. Not putting together 1,000 bats, not going out and picking up more random ass home run hitters to try and elicit a lineup. Let's try and create some chemistry, some cohesion, and create an actual team that can go further than a wild card round. And maybe, just maybe, get back to our winning ways in New York. That's all I'm asking for. Just, it's very simple. Just try and put together a real cohesive baseball team. All right, rant over. Let's talk some NFL. All right, so I think the only place to start after this past week is Cardinals-Rams. Cardinals put it on the Rams 37-20. Kyler Murray, 24 of 32 for 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, 39 yards rushing. Stafford was 26 of 41, 280 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 pick. The Cardinals were dominant throughout this game. McVay was outcoached by everyone's favorite coach to hate, my boy Cliff Kingsbury, the best-looking coach in the NFL, I might add. The Rams defense could not stop the run. Connor, Edmonds, and Kyler combined for 209 yards rushing. The turnovers were also a major part of this game. Rams had 2 costly turnovers. The Cardinals had 0. With all that being said, I still think the Rams are the best football team in the NFL. I do. I still think at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, come February, we're going to see the Rams in the Super Bowl. I actually still think the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl. This game to me is a one-off. It's the NFC West. They're going to beat the crap out of each other throughout the season. There was not going to be a single team. There was no chance the Rams are going to go undefeated. There's no chance the Cardinals are going to go undefeated. That division is too tough. I still think it's the best division in football. The AFC West is competing with that, however, but I still think overall the NFC West is just, it is a gauntlet throughout. You have 4 teams. They're all potential playoff teams in that division. The Cardinals, though, real quick, you got to give the Cardinals credit. You got to give Kyler Murray credit. Kyler Murray is your front runner for MVP right now. I don't think there's any question about it. I know it's early. I know everyone. Look, I've listened to everybody from Matt to listening to people on other podcasts say it's early. This is what happens with the Rams, or excuse me, this is what happens with the Cardinals. This is what happened with the Cardinals last year. Once Kyler Murray gets injured, it's all going to go downhill. Maybe. And that's if Kyler Murray gets injured. If he doesn't get injured, though, and it was clear, by the way, that he was injured last season, that's why his numbers fell off the way that they did. If Murray stays healthy, though, there's no reason not to believe that this Cardinals team is not a playoff team. Not only that it's not a playoff team, but that it's a Super Bowl caliber team. This team is, it's top 5 in offense, it's top 5 in defense, and they've played tough opponents. It's not like the Cardinals have been playing a cupcake schedule here. So, with all due respect to everybody else, you know, screaming pump the brakes on the Kyler Murray bandwagon and on the Cardinals bandwagon, and I hear you and I understand that, but you also, in the moment right now, it's okay to give the Cardinals credit for what they've done so far this season, because it has been pretty damn sensational. Moving on, let's talk about the second biggest game of the weekend, which may have been the biggest game of the weekend, at least in New England. Bucks-Patriots. Bucks beat the Patriots 19-17. Brady was 22 of 43 for 269 yards, 0 touchdowns. Mac Jones, 31 of 40, 275 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. That interception was not his fault, not even close to being his fault. The ball went off the receiver's hands. I was dead wrong about Mac Jones. I think this is where we need to start here, is I got to take some accountability. I was dead wrong about Mac Jones. I came into the season, I came into the draft, saying that Mac Jones, in my opinion, was the second worst quarterback coming out of college, just ahead of Justin Fields. Now, I was dead right about Justin Fields, dead wrong about Mac Jones. Mac Jones was incredible in this football game. He had at one point, he had 19 straight completions. All you people out there who are going to throw out the whole, he doesn't throw the ball downfield. Look, man, I don't give a shit what he's doing or how you want to try and slice and dice it. The kid's good. He's accurate. He's smart with the football. He has the poise in the pocket. His pocket awareness is unbelievable. His vision is incredible. This kid is going to be a stud. I've swung and I've missed on a few quarterbacks in my day. I have never been more wrong about a player, I think, ever since doing this show than I have been with Mac Jones. He drove his team down at the end of the game against the GOAT in what should have been a game-winning drive. I cannot tell you how pissed I am that Belichick decided to kick that field goal. That, to me, that was not a Belichickian type of move. That was a stupid. You were driving down the field. You had the momentum. It was 4th and 3. My thought process is this. All right, 2 things. You miss the field goal, the game is over. You miss it on 4th-and-3, the game is over. But even if you make the field goal, you still have Brady's got over 50 seconds left and 2 timeouts. All right, so think about that for a second. Even if the Patriots had made that field goal, Brady still would have gotten the ball back with over 50 seconds and 2 timeouts. If you do not think that Brady would not have drove down that field and won that football game, you're out of your mind, because I am almost promising you that is what would have happened. The smart play would have been, look, if we miss the field goal, we're dead. If we go for it on 4th-and-3, we're dead. But at least if we go for it on 4th-and-3, if we convert this first down, then we inch a little bit closer for a field goal. That's number one. And number two, we can milk the clock down to nothing and win this football game. Presuming that you make the field goal. But I didn't like the call. It really pissed me off. And I also feel like you took away an opportunity for Mac Jones to get the ultimate confidence factor in that moment. Think about it. Your rookie quarterback, who is now considered the heir apparent to Tom Brady, who's supposed to fit in Tom Brady's massive shoes in New England, you're going to drive down the field on a in the fourth quarter, last minute drive to beat the GOAT in what used to be his house, in the house that Brady built in prime time. Think about what that would have done for Mac Jones's confidence, not only just for the rest of this season, but for the rest of his career. I think that this was a really, really poor move by Belichick. And I trust Belichick on almost every decision he makes. That decision in that moment, I think, was very, very short-sighted. Getting back to the game, this game was a game of turnovers, like the Rams and Cardinals. There was 2 turnovers for the Patriots. The Bucs didn't have a single turnover. The Bucs did not play an overall great football game, actually really more so than that. Tom Brady didn't play a great football game. Brady got bailed out with a terrible pass interference call in the fourth quarter. The Patriots got robbed on that fourth quarter, which ended up leading Brady down the field to get what ended up being the game-winning field goal. But the Bucs haven't looked good on offense for the second week in a row. And I think we also need to point out here, before I close this part of it out, that Mac Jones outplayed Tom Brady in that football game. If you look at the stat line and even when you watch the game, look, Brady did have some opportunities to score touchdowns. Antonio Brown dropped 2 potential touchdowns in the end zone on that final drive, by the way, that ended up being the go-ahead field goal. But just look, if you look at the stats, Mac Jones, again, was 31 of 40 passing. Brady was 22 of 43. Jones threw for 275 yards. Brady threw for 269. And if you look at the QB rating, Jones was 101.6. Brady was 70.8. Like, again, the fact of the matter is New England's going to be just fine with Mac Jones. It's going to take a year, maybe 2, for the Patriots to actually build the personnel around Mac Jones to make Mac Jones special. But this team is going to be just fine. This organization is going to be just fine. So on the other end, though, with the Bucs, and I'm just going to point this out, the Bucs haven't looked great the last couple of weeks. I know they eked out this victory, and that's great. It goes in the win column and whatever. But they haven't looked good. They didn't look good against the Rams, and they didn't look good again. And I understand it was raining and it was pouring, but at the end of the day, the Patriots kept this game a lot closer than anybody thought they would. Now, the Bucs get a reprieve. They get to play Miami next week, which is a bye week, but still, Bucs haven't looked that great, and Brady, he's slowing down a little bit. He caught fire early, the first few games of the season, but now he's starting to slow down, and he's certainly not the top contender for MVP like we thought he would be 2 weeks in. Cowboys absolutely obliterated the Panthers 36-28. This game was not as close as it seemed. The Cowboys, just like they did with the Eagles, really took their pedal off the gas late. Dak Prescott, 14 of 22 for 188 yards and 4 touchdowns. Elliott had 20 carries for 143 yards and a touchdown. Sam Darnold, 26 of 39, 301 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, and 2 rushing touchdowns. Real quick, Sam Darnold played really well. Again, Darnold, for the fourth week in a row, has proven that he is a good, solid NFL quarterback. I couldn't be happier for the guy. I really couldn't. What happened to him in New York was just unfortunate. And he continues to prove the Adam Gase effect is just in full swing here. Darnold goes to a better organization. He has a much better head coach. And you look and you see how he's thriving. Very similar to what we're looking at with Matt Stafford in Los Angeles. The Panthers are a good football team. The Cowboys are just better. Their offense is top four in the league. It's averaging 420 total points per game. That's behind Vegas, Arizona, and Kansas City. The Cowboys are for real. And I know it's early, and the Cowboys have a tendency to start off hot and then cool down by Thanksgiving. I get that. All of you people out there who are A, claiming that I'm a Cowboys homer, you're an idiot. And B, I get what you're saying about the Cowboys and the fact that we always hype the Cowboys early because they always seem to have hot starts, and then they fall off the wagon. I get that. But if this team can stay healthy, and that's the thing. If this team stays healthy, because that's always what happens to the Cowboys, it's not so much that their play falls off the wagon, it's that they get injured. They've been injury prone the last 5 or 6 years, whether it's been Dak, whether it's been Elliott, whether it's been somebody, some key member of their defense, they always seem to have an injury that ends up plaguing the rest of their season. If they stay healthy, there is no question that this team is a true Super Bowl contender. And Prescott has entered into the MVP conversation. Prescott is top three in completion percentage and passing touchdowns. All right, so Prescott is probably what, top four, top five in the MVP conversation? I mean, maybe he's top two for you. I don't know. But he's in that conversation. And while the skeptics out there believe that the Cowboys are going to falter late, which again could happen, I'm not saying that the Cowboys won't fall off. History says that they will. Okay, so I'll give you that. History does say that the Cowboys will fall off later in the season. If they do, though, if it happens, you cannot take away what they've done so far this season. For at least the first four games this season, that offense has been potent, and arguably, it's the best offense in football. All right, and finally, we're going to talk Chargers, Raiders, and then we'll do some news and notes around the league. So Chargers beat the Raiders 28-14 on Monday Night Football. Herbert was 25-38 for 222 yards, 3 touchdowns. Carr was 21-34 for 196 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. The Chargers continue to roll. The Chargers defense completely shut down the Raiders running game. They only had 48 yards all game. Chargers look good, at least in the first half anyway. I mean, that's where the damage was done. The 3 touchdown passes by Herbert all came in the first half. The Raiders really kind of stepped on the gas in the second half, but unfortunately, there was just too much of a deficit for them to overcome. The Chargers need to clean up those penalties, though. They had another over 100 yards worth of penalties against them. They had 7 penalties for 105 yards. I think that's the third week in a row where they've had multiple penalties that cost them close to, if not more than 100 yards of penalty yards. Look, the penalties cost them against the Cowboys. It almost cost them against the Chiefs. And again, it could have cost them a game against the Raiders. I'm not saying that the coaching staff isn't 10 times better than it was last year, because clearly it is. And I like the coaching staff of the Chargers. But you guys got to clean that shit up, because that's going to cost you a playoff game. Now, I'm assuming the Chargers are making the playoffs. I think they're arguably the best team in the AFC West right now. We'll see how well the Chiefs play against the Bills this weekend. But regardless of who the better team is, if the Chargers make the playoffs and they still haven't cleaned up this penalty crap, that's going to come back and bite them in the ass. They need to clean that shit up. The Raiders' red-hot passing game this week slowed. Carr threw for under 200 yards for the first time this season, and the Raiders are still a good football team, though. Like, I still like this team. I hated them coming into the season, but watching them over the last few weeks, I do like this team. They've got to clean up their offensive line play, though. I mean, Joey Bosa made a comment after the game that as soon as you put pressure on Carr, Carr folds. And Carr has, ever since he had that season-ending injury a few years ago, as soon as pressure comes on him, he does tend to throw that ball away real fast or just go down like a sack of potatoes, because I do think he's terrified to get injured again. So the Raiders have got to work on that offensive line just a bit. And Jacobs has got to get fully healthy. I mean, I know he played in this football game, but he's coming off of an injury where he missed the last few weeks. So Jacobs has got to get a little healthier. But the Raiders, I really do think, are going to be fine. I think they're going to be a playoff contender. If whether or not they make the playoffs, we'll see. But they're sure as hell a lot better than I thought they would be early on the season. And the Chargers, like I said, the Chargers to me are the best team in the AFC West. And they're a Super Bowl contender. I mean, at least what we've seen so far this season through the first four games. The Chargers, the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bills, I think, are your top four teams. I know a lot of people like the Browns. And I haven't really talked about the Browns a lot the past couple weeks, mainly because I don't like the offense that much. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Baker Mayfield. At least what I've seen so far this season hasn't exactly been great. He's been decent. You know, he's done enough to keep the Browns alive. But when you look into what Baker's done in the fourth quarter, and I'm kind of cheating here, I'll go to the other news and notes in a second. But if you look at what Mayfield's done in the fourth quarter in a lot of these games, when the Browns have really needed a conversion late just to keep the clock running, or to get into field goal range to put the game out of reach, or score a touchdown to put the game out of reach, Mayfield hasn't been able to deliver. And if you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you got to start making those late game plays. The reason why the Browns have won these football games have been because of their defense, not because of Baker Mayfield. So that's why I don't buy into the Browns being a Super Bowl contender. Again, I think your Super Bowl contenders in the AFC right now, no, in no particular order, are the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bills. All right, other news and notes around the league here. The Colts won their first game of the season, 27-17 over Miami. Wentz was 24-32 for 228 yards and two touchdowns. The Colts easily played their best game of the season against a reeling Dolphins team. Since their week one win over New England, Miami has been just terrible. Brissett is unfortunately not the answer at QB, and neither is Tua. Miami is definitely going to end up being the most disappointing team this side of Atlanta so far this season. I don't even think it's close. For the third week in a row, the Bills slaughtered their opponent, beat the Texans 40-0. They have a massive game this weekend against the Chiefs. I'm going to touch on that in my game picks coming up. The Chiefs bounced back against a crappy Eagles team, 42-30. Mahomes was 278 yards and threw for five touchdown passes. However, the Chiefs kept that game a lot closer than it should have been. They turned it on late, but that game was much closer than it should have been early on in the fourth quarter. Trey Lance got his debut in the second half of the 49ers loss to the Seahawks, 28-21. Jimmy G left the game at the end of the first half with a calf injury. Man, Jimmy G is just injury riddled, man. That's not good. It's not. They're saying that he could probably start on Sunday, but Garoppolo keeps getting injured. That's not good. No bueno on that one. Lance looked pretty solid in comparison to all the other rookies, though, not named Mac Jones this season. 9 of 18, 157 yards, two touchdowns, 41 rushing yards, and no touchdowns. I know he didn't get the win, but he came in, when he came into the second half, the Seahawks were already leading in the game, but he played well. Lance is going to be completely fine. I wouldn't be shocked if Lance ends up being the quarterback midway through the season, especially if Jimmy G is going to keep having like these random ass injury issues. And finally, Daniel Jones led the New York Giants to their first victory in overtime against the Saints in New Orleans. That's right, my boy Daniel Jones. He was 28-40, 402 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. Jones continues to prove that he's not the reason the Giants are 1-3 this season. Daniel Jones is the answer quarterback for the Giants. All right, I think if the Giants move off of Daniel Jones, they're making a massive mistake. The kid he's gonna be fine. He's got a rocket of an arm. He's one hell of an athlete, and he has completely changed the fortunes, I believe, of his career this season. If he continues on this trajectory, Daniel Jones is going to be just fine, and he's going to be a solid quarterback for the Giants over the next 5 to 10 years. All right, game picks for week 5. I was 3-1 last week. I'm 7-9 on the season, so we're getting a little bit better. Browns and Chargers. Right now, the Chargers are a 1-point favorite. I'm taking the Chargers to easily cover this game. Browns' offense has been pretty quiet, as I talked about earlier. And as good as their defense is, meaning the Browns, I don't think they can slow down Justin Herbert. I just don't. I mean, Herbert's been too damn good. Herbert's in the MVP conversation as well. I don't have him as high as I have Murray or Dak Prescott, for that matter. But, I mean, Herbert's hanging around. So I don't like the Browns, guys. I have no confidence in the Browns. I'm sure some people do out there. I just don't. It's really the Baker Mayfield factor. I mean, look, Mayfield has been okay. He's been decent. He's been a game manager, but like I said a few minutes ago, he's not doing what he needs to do at the end of games to win football games. They're keeping those games close because of the defense. And frankly, that game against Minnesota last week was a weird game. Minnesota should have won that football game. Bills at Chiefs. This is the game of the week without question. The Bills are a 3-point underdog in Kansas City. It's the Sunday night game. This game is going to tell us whether the Chiefs are still the best team in the AFC. The Bills have averaged 39 points per game over the last three games. The Chiefs defense has been absolutely dreadful this season. With that being said, I think this is going to be a shootout. All right, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. This, to me, this game is going to tell me whether or not the Chiefs can overcome their crappy defense, meaning whether or not Pat Mahomes can overcome this defense. Because the Bills are very likely your other Super Bowl favorite in the AFC. But these are your two Super Bowl favorites, I think. And then obviously I already talked about the Ravens and the Chargers also being in the conversation, but I think these two teams are the best two teams in the AFC, or at least your two favorites still. This is the heavyweight matchup that you want to see. If the Chiefs win this football game, it's a high-scoring game, like the Chiefs' defense still doesn't show up like they have an all season long, and the Bills put up points like they have the last 3 weeks. If Mahomes is able to overcome this game, this is that quote-unquote get-right game, then everyone can take a deep breath. All the Chiefs fans out there can go, okay, look, our defense may suck, but Mahomes can still do it. He's got the magic. He can still find ways to win. However, if they lose this football game, that to me is a bad sign for the Chiefs moving forward, because what it shows is that although Mahomes could be great, Mahomes could be prolific, Mahomes could even be the best quarterback in football, he cannot overcome how piss poor that defense is. This Chiefs team reminds me of Manning's Colts teams in the mid-2000s, where Manning was arguably the best quarterback in football, could put up points every single week against any defense. It didn't matter who it was. But he pretty much had to average 27, 30, 33 points a game in order to keep the Colts in the game because the defenses were so bad. The 1 year that the Colts had the really good defense was the year that Manning won the Super Bowl in 2006. So I feel like Mahomes is in a similar predicament where he knows his defense sucks and the pressure is on him to put up points, because if he doesn't, Chiefs don't have a shot. With all that being said, I think the Bills are going to win this football game. I like the Bills. I think the Bills are they're clearly playing better on offense, but they also have a much better defense than I think people are giving them credit for. Now, with all due respect to the Bills, it's not like the last 2 weeks when they've completely annihilated their opponents. They've been playing relatively cupcake opponents, playing the Texans and Miami. So, I mean, they have slaughtered their opponents, don't get me wrong, but it's not like they're playing playoff caliber teams. But with that being said, I just like the Bills overall in this game. So I would take the Bills and the points. I think they win by 7 in this football game. All right, and that brings me to the Giants at the Cowboys. The Giants are a 7.5-point underdog in this game. Take the Giants. Too many points. The Cowboys are getting too many points at home. This is an NFC East rivalry game. The Cowboys will win the game, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than 7 or 7.5. Just take the Giants. Take the Giants. I think it's a 3-point game. It'll be a close game. Cowboys are the better team, but trust me on this one. Take the Giants. Dolphins at Bucks is my final game. Bucks are a 10.5-point favorite. Take the Bucks all the way. I mean, I would take the Bucks to win by like 20. I think this is the Tom Brady game where he throws like 4 or 5 touchdown passes because he didn't play that great in New England. People can use the weather excuse and say, hey, you know, he didn't play well because it was raining, because Antonio Brown dropped a few balls. This will be the quote-unquote get-right game for Brady, where he just dominates and reminds everybody that he should still be in the MVP conversation. I like the Bucs by like 20 in this game. I think you're looking at a slaughtering. All right, everybody. So this week, I have the privilege to be joined by, well, a regular guest on this podcast at this point, Austin Space, who I also have the privilege of working with on Spaceball. He has a new season out for his Pointless 64 podcast, all about Hey Arnold. Mr. Space, how are you doing? And thank you for coming on today.
Lala, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. I love it when you have me on. It's almost like a tradition. Every new season, I come on and hang with you for a little bit on your show, which I really love. And I really do appreciate that, an opportunity to promote it and get it out to different people. So thank you so much. And yeah, but it feels like, it doesn't feel too crazy, because I've been talking to you every 2 weeks, talking baseball with you. So now we can just talk about something even more pointless. So, you know.
Yeah. So I figured what I would do is I wanted to start off the interview by, you know, for those who may be new to my podcast and haven't heard you come on here before to discuss previous seasons of Pointless 64, Would you please explain the premise of the show for everybody?
Sure. Pointless 64 is a project I've been doing. It's my own solo podcast that I've been very passionate about. It's where we take 64 of something, break them all into a bracket. So your sports fans will understand this completely well. Your listeners will understand this well, where much like March Madness, there is a bracket that's put out, but instead of basketball teams, it's pop culture. And each season, it's different things. So in the past, we've done Generation 1 Pokemon. We've done Christmas songs. We did MLB mascots with you for the first season. And I host it. And I bring on two panelists. And they come on and discuss it with me. So you were, as an example, you were part of the first season. We did, because of your sports background, we did Major League Baseball mascots together. So you, it was a lot of fun. And each season's a new topic. So it's six episodes each season. And we go round by round to determine who the best one is. And this season's Hey Arnold characters. So it's something I'm very, very happy to have. I love Hey Arnold. So.
All right. So I got to know. So I listened to the first episode. I'm not going to give anything away from anybody. So you guys are going to have to do this on your own. But I have to know, how are you able to get two staffers from Nickelodeon who also worked on Hey Arnold onto your show? Like, what is your secret to get all of these like awesome panelists every single season?
This is this is one of the best parts of the show. And I think it's one of the things, because like, while I host it, other people star in it. So how do I get them? Well, in one of my previous, for this example, first of all, I just stay in touch with almost everybody via Facebook, and I'm never afraid to reach out, you know, and I just explain to them what it is. And if they don't want to do it, then I just move on. And I'm also not afraid to ask, hey, if you know somebody, how can you do it? So what's interesting about this one is that I knew neither of these two before. So first of all, my guest for Hey Arnold, this for the Hey Arnold Pointless 64 podcast this season, is two basically Nickelodeon producers, one that formerly worked at Nickelodeon and one that currently works at Nickelodeon. And as you said, they worked on the Jungle Movie, both of them did for promotional work. So throughout my travels and one of my jobs that I had, there was a girl that I worked with for a short period of time, and then she left. And she went on to work for Nickelodeon. She ended up working at Nick Jr. primarily. And I reached out to her. And ironically right now, or coincidentally, you know that Steve coming out and saying like, hey, I know it's been a little bit, made everybody like kind of emotional a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That went viral. She was like in charge of that. So I know her. She rose through the ranks. She's been really good. She's a producer there at Nick Jr. for a while. So it's funny, when I reached out to her, I knew her for, she knew that I was a big Nickelodeon fan and a big Hey Arnold fan. And I, when the Hey Arnold Jungle Movie got released, I texted her and I was like, oh my gosh. And she's like, yeah, I knew about it for a while. And we talked about it. And then I haven't talked to her in a while, but I wasn't afraid. So I reached out to her because I wanted to celebrate the 25th anniversary. I reached out to her. She said, hey, that sounds great. And then she goes, also, it's Blue. And this was before everything went down. She's like, it's Blue's Clues 25th anniversary. If we want to do a spark one, I said, well, I've already settled on this and there's a method to do it. And she says, you know, I would do it and I will do it, but I have two other people that I think would be better for you. And I'm like, okay. It's like, if one of them like is unavailable, I'll step in, of course. But I know two people that are available. And then she set me up with Daniel Bailey and Andrew Flores. And these two are enormous, knowledgeable experts on Hey Arnold, for sure. They worked on the Jungle Movie as well as being fans, and I think that really exudes through the episode. So I was just talking to them via email the entire summer because I was moving, and I said, we're going to be doing this, here's the bracket and everything. But yeah, and then we sat down and had our first Skype, and when you hear us like in this first episode, we probably talked for maybe 10 minutes beforehand. Just saying, hey, it's finally nice to see who you are. But I feel like by the end of that first episode, we became fast friends. So that's how I got it. And I usually just try to reach out, or I think of an idea and I go, okay, who would be good? Who's doing this? And then I reach out, and sometimes it works out like this. Sometimes I know both of them. In this case, first time I knew neither of them. So it was really great.
So was Hey Arnold always the plan? Was Hey Arnold always a plan for a season? Was this topic something that was always in the back of your mind when you decided to make Pointless 64. Was this one of the shows that you always wanted to do?
Kind of, yeah. Like we were, I say that admittedly on the show, but one of the things is you want to do it where there's good timing. So people do come to me with ideas and I go, well, okay, that's great. But like, who cares? You know, like this is not really relevant, you know, but when there's an opportunity to do something where it's celebrating an anniversary or something's debuting or whatnot, that's when you do it. Cause it just makes sense. So, Hey Arnold has always been one of my favorite shows. I mean, I shouldn't even say it's definitely my favorite Nickelodeon show, but I love that show. It's funny. It's very easy to rewatch. You and I both grew up on it. We were pretty good fans of it, watching it. I own the DVD. I own the movie. I own the Jungle movie. And I just thought it's like, okay, they really do have an enormous cast of characters. I remember watching, it's like, wow, they even have all these bit parts. It's almost like The Simpsons a little bit. There's tons of characters. They built a world. And I felt like that would be suited for that kind of thing. And I always, in the back of my mind, I'm like, who is the best Hey Arnold character? I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if we did it this way? So this was a subject I wanted to do for a while. And I'm happy we finally got to do it, even though we're only four in. I mean, like it's what I really wanted to do because it's fun, you know. So, and it'll hit that 90s nostalgia, and I love that. So.
All right, so here's a question that's a little out of left field for you. So everyone always talks about who their favorite character is, who the best character is, and I don't want to do that because I think that will come through when they listen to your episodes when you're doing your bracket. But I was wondering if you could give me your Mount Rushmore of underrated Hey Arnold characters.
Underrated Hey Arnold characters. Well, first of all, let me throw something back at you. Like, do you have a favorite character on Hey Arnold?
Oh, I do.
Who's your not the best, but who's your favorite? We do talk.
Grandpa. Grandpa is my absolute favorite.
Okay. Mount Rushmore of underrated characters. Do they have to be on the bracket? Like maybe
don't have to be on the bracket. They could just be four characters that you don't think get enough love when it comes to the show.
Question. You know what? Know what I'm going to pull up here? So every season I pull up the workbook. And it's basically how we did it. So this season, everything was seeded by number of appearances. And of course I get into it there. So, you know, I'm going to go into the whites because those are just not, they did not get in. So let me see here. Let me filter it by that. And let me filter it by this. So who here? I think we talk about him on the show. One of them is Mr. Licklider. We'll give it to him. He is sort of the rival to Mr. Simmons. These are all not going to be on the bracket. And he's like very funny. He goes around and reviews children's plays for no reason. And he's like arguing with Mr. Simmons over it. It's such a bizarre concept to have. Let's see who else we got here. Oh, here's a good one. Oh man, these are really good. Some of these are really good. Rex Smythe Higgins. Do you remember him? Like grandpa's old British rival. And he had a son, he had a grandson that was rich.
Vaguely.
Yeah. Vaguely. And they were the ones that stole the pig and wanted to cook him.
Okay. Okay.
And they cheated on the boat.
That makes sense. That's right.
I'm going to cheat a little bit here. There's a few I'm going to cheat. Nick Vermicelli is a very good character. He's sort of Big Bob's right-hand man that deals with all these black market deals. He has a long ponytail.
Oh, with the gold chain?
Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah, I think he's pretty underrated. He's pretty funny. Then we're getting into like one notes here. Oh, boy. There's so many characters, man. Okay, I have to stay at the top. That's what I'll have to do. I'll have to stay at the top. What about, you know why? It was such a one note. Big Gino's good. He was basically in only two episodes. He's like the leader of the mafia in fourth grade. So what would I do? Did I do three? Or I did four. So that's four really obscure characters that we can do there, you know, that I don't think get enough because some of them came on other seasons. Also, shout out to Don Reynolds. I'm going to give a shout out to Don Reynolds, too, because he's Dino Simone's partner, and they hate each other, but they're best friends. So I think they're pretty funny, too. So, yeah.
So how do you determine the way that you're doing is so, because you said that in this particular season, the way that you're seeding them is based off of appearances and episodes.
Yes.
How did you come to that decision? Like what is it that you're, that you work through in order to determine how you want to do the seeding?
Well, going into every pointless 64, a lot of people like says, oh, just do whatever. It's like, no, you have to, what makes my show different is that the show, everything is done by empirical data. Okay. So I think the obvious thing going into it is number of appearances. If there was a character that appeared more, statistically, they would mean, okay, this is a better value to the show, even though that's not the case. That's why we have the debates, but statistically that would make sense. You know, like for example, Helga here is used the third most. She's used 122 appearances. That means she would be a big character. Gerald's used 128, you know, so those I feel like should go to the top. And then as far as coordinating them, where are they going to be? I just have to think, it's like, okay, how can we pair these and group these together to figure it out? So there was a multitude of ways I could have done this. I was also looking at like sort of an occupation type thing. Was it going to be students? Was it going to be townsfolk? But then I realized, I think we need to keep it simple. And I just went men, women, boys, girls, and that disseminated. And then from there, if there were any ties, they were just broken by relationship to Arnold. So I think you have to look at it empirically. And I think that makes sense. And I think you're going to see that a lot. If I do another TV show, you're probably going to see number of appearances again. It's going to be very similar to this. I don't think it's going to be much different. I think this makes sense for what we have.
Cool. All right. So this is your fourth season. And yeah, I know you put your heart and soul into every season you do, but if you had to choose a favorite season thus far, which one would it be?
Well, I can't change. I can't choose because each of them has their own special moments. So what I'll say was, each season has their own special moments, and I can't, if I say them, they'll spoil the season. And I think you'll know which ones are where. So, I can't pick. It's like picking a favorite kid there, you know. I could tell you off pod maybe, but no, I will say this, all the guests are good. That's a really great part of the show. All the guests are good. And if you tune in, you're going to have a lot of fun and you're going to learn a lot from really smart people in the field, which I'm happy to have every season. So,
when you're coming up with your idea for mm-hmm. a season, do you have guests and do you base it off of like the guests you can get, or is it, do you come up with the decision, like for instance for this season,
yeah,
I'm gonna do Hey Arnold, okay, now I gotta go find the people who can help me make this season work, or does it go in reverse and you've got a couple different ideas and you're just reaching out to figure out which panelists you can get, and then that becomes what your season is?
So I do have a thing on my phone, and I always keep track of release dates and when things are coming out, and I try to figure out what we can do, and that actually determines like what I'm going to be watching, for example. So for the entire summer, I watched Hey Arnold. So I do come out with the idea first, and then I go, okay, which avenues can I go? I'll say this because this one was spoiled, but I'm glad it didn't work out because I couldn't have done it anyway. I did want to do Looney Tunes was one, because of Space Jam, you know, the movie that you really went and saw for some reason. So Space Jam, I was like, oh, Looney Tunes would be great, but I was unable to find a good contact that would work. So that's why that season didn't happen. Hey Arnold, I started, and then I was like, okay, here's the idea. But then fairly early on, once I land upon it, first of all, I got to ensure there's 64 characters or whatever criteria there is. And if there is, then I go, let me reach out. And that's what I did here. So I was like, okay, the 64, let me reach out. And it did. And my friend got back to me and it worked out. So luckily, as the show continues on, more people listen, more people get involved, and the more networking I had. So I think that opens up more doors. So maybe I could do a Looney Tunes down the road if that made sense, just because I opened some doors at Nickelodeon, you know, there's an animation door I opened. So yeah, it just depends. That's usually what I do. I start with that and then go from there. And then I go, okay, who would be perfect for this? So that's why you were involved too. It's like, okay, this would be perfect. You know, let's start something. I did want to start something sports. It was baseball season. Boom. Well, Valley, here we go. And then I knew Jason for a long time. So just that's how it goes usually, idea first.
Is Hey Arnold your favorite Nickelodeon cartoon of all time?
I think it's my favorite Nickelodeon show. What about you? I mean, is there...
No, Hey Arnold, I believe, was my number one. Yeah. Rugrats is in the top three.
Okay. My sister was big on Rugrats.
I liked Doug.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else do they have. Rocket Power was okay.
Rocket Power. There's Rocco.
Rocco's Modern Life was pretty damn funny.
Yeah. But I feel like nothing comes close to the only one I kind of like that nobody cared about was a show called Pelswick. Remember Pelswick, the kid in the wheelchair?
I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah, that was like on our way out. It wasn't David Arquette was in it, of all people. So okay. Yeah, he played his guardian angel. But I got to go Arnold. I think there not much comes close to that, maybe.
But you are right, though. I mean, I don't think there's another show. Really, I don't know of another cartoon that was
a cartoon
that was meant for kids that was as involved as Arnold was.
Yeah. Yeah. They really built a world out of that show. That's what's cool. It's like you really felt like you were part of a universe because it wasn't like it did center around Arnold, but it also like you really felt like you were part of the neighborhood because it felt really lived in. And I feel like that's what made the show kind of cool. It's like, oh, we're going to Hillwood. Who are we going to see today? You know?
Right.
Yeah. The only ones I could like all that I liked a lot. I mean, for sure. But those live action, I still think Arnold's the best thing. My favorite thing that came out of Nickelodeon. Of course, SpongeBob too. And SpongeBob's really good. But that's probably the biggest, most popular, you know, marketable thing they've gotten out of it. But yeah, man, Arnold's special show.
All right. So last question. So can you give us any hint as to what you're working on potentially or what you may be leaning towards for your next season? Do you have anything in the hopper or are you still kind of going, you know, trying to brainstorm your season five? I know you're just putting out season four, but I'm already interested to kind of see where you're going for season five.
That's how it goes. I do have a feeler out there. I haven't heard back yet, but I do have a feeler out there and it's going to be really fun. It's going to be very, I try not to keep, it's not going to be like a TV show again. I try not to keep things like the same. Mm-hmm. I try to do something different each season. So it's fresh. But this is, this one will be fun. And it makes sense. It was so out of left field when I got it. And I did reach out to one person, but I haven't heard back. I'm actually going to have to follow up soon because I really want to make it happen. But I do tease at the end of season six that I am already working on it. And I'm just in the face of that yet. No brackets have been built or anything. So.
Do you have an idea of when you would like it to be released or is that still up in the air at this point?
That would still be up in the, if it goes through, it'll be sooner than we think. I'll say cool. That. It won't. I don't think it's going to be this big. What was it? February to October. That was 7 months. Oof. Yeah. It's not going to be like that. I don't want to do that again. Now that I'm set on my place, I'm not going to do that again.
Well, that's good. Now I didn't like having to wait 7 months for season four.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's just me speaking selfishly. All right. So I want to open the floor to you. I want you to take the time, plug away, whatever you want to plug away. This is, you know, time is yours.
Okay, well, first I'll plug away and then I'll ask you a question. First of all, yeah, check out Pointless 64 episode one is up now for season one. You can also follow my socials if you want to find the bracket. I did update that. So you can go on Google Sheets, download it. It's much more digital friendly now, as well as all the seasons are available. So if you've missed a season and you're like, oh, I'm going to check out Christmas songs, missed that one, you can fill out a bracket and play along. That one's done. So they drop every Monday. You know, Sunday into Monday going at midnight. We have two great panelists, Daniel Bailey and Andrew Flores. They're really great producers that have worked on the Jungle Movie and have worked or are currently working at Nickelodeon. So you're in for a treat. And I will say this season, this I think is the longest season we've done. I'll spoil this for you. The first episode was 2.5 hours. Second episode, hour 20 minutes. And then everything is a minimum of 40 minutes going on from there.
Wow. So all right.
There's a lot of content going on. And you're not going to have one of those final four episodes where it's a 20-minute episode. Nope. Minimum 40, which is We had a to hash through. But I did want to ask you, because we didn't get a chance to talk about this. You filled out your bracket here, and I just wanted to go through it with there. Did you have any upsets? And what was your final four? Because I'm always interested to see how people do or what people are thinking, and I can just look at them and
smile. I don't think I had any crazy upsets, to be honest with you. I'm just looking through very quickly at the seeding here.
Okay.
Not really. So my final four, I have Helga coming out of the girls bracket. I have Harold coming out of the boys bracket. And then the other two are the two one seeds. I have grandma and grandpa coming out of the men and women's bracket.
Helga, Harold, grandma, and grandpa. Who beats who in the finale? What do you have?
So I've got grandpa against Helga in the finals. And I have grandpa winning it all, obviously, like I said earlier, because he is my favorite guy. So
I
took grandpa all the way.
Did you find it, like, one of the funny things, I did talk about it. Did you struggle with any of them? Any matchups that were like, oh my gosh.
So I did actually, there were a couple of them that I had a difficult time with. So to believe it or not, Gerald against Eugene was kind of tough for me.
Oh, so you went down the line. You had Eugene going, oh, that's in the first round or second round, rather.
Second round,
If Eugene beats Peapod and if Gerald beats Joey Stevens.
Yeah, man. That was tough for me because I think Eugene's absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I find his character to be very good. So that one was a tough one for me. Sid and Harold was surprisingly tough as well. So,
if you have Sid beating Park and Harold beating Chocolate Boy. Yeah, 5-4 seed. Those are, I mean, Sid... as a 5 seed, it's pretty low for such a big character on the show.
Let me see. Where's the other one that was tough for me? There was one more. I can't find it now. Of course I can't.
That's all good.
Oh, it was. So this would be in your Sweet 16. Okay. So this is, if this were to happen, Grandpa versus Oscar.
Okay.
That was.
So you have Oscar beating Mr. Wynn.
I do have Oscar beating Mr. Wynn.
Okay.
Which that was a tough one too, mind you. But
or Martin Johansson, that's the other one. Likely Mr. Wynn, but Arnger. Yeah, so Oscar.
Yeah, so if we're going favorite. Yeah, because I win favorites in this bracket for the most part, to be honest.
Right. Oscar versus Grandpa, okay.
But yeah, man, Grandpa is my favorite, but Oscar is he's so damn funny. He's not likable by any means, but he is so funny. That was a difficult one for me. That really was.
That's I will say, and I think I've said it publicly, that the men's bracket, I think, is the toughest section.
Dude, really it is always your bottom right section is always the toughest bracket.
So I did look at this, and you made note of that. You are right, except for season 2. Christmas Secular Legendary was in the top right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. That's where Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire wasn't even in the top 16. That's how tough. I think.
Yeah, you took some heat for that one.
Much I can do.
I'm just saying. I remember. I saw a lot of people on your social media not happy.
I know
that song was not there.
I know it wouldn't even. It would have been a 16 seed if it was. That's how stacked that bracket was. I think that was probably the toughest that we've ever had, ever, of all the
sections. That was an intense season throughout. That had me on the edge of my seat. Well, mainly because I had quite a few songs I was rooting for.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I hope you do well. You're going to have to keep me posted. Let me know how you do each season. And you don't have to spoil anything, but how'd you do on your first round?
I did pretty well, actually. I only got 2 wrong.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I'm still alive.
Okay, good.
I'm still alive.
Great. All right.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I know you're a busy guy. Thank you for taking the time to coming on and promote the podcast. Everybody go out, make sure you download the first episode. It's currently available wherever you get your podcasts, and just download every single Monday. You know what? Do me one solid here. Instead of just downloading it, just hit that subscribe button and then it automatically does it for you. And then Austin doesn't have to remind you ever again. It's just going to automatically do it for you every Monday. Be sure to fill out your brackets. Those are available wherever Austin's social media feeds are, which You want to give him one more time just in case?
Yeah. People... So follow me on Facebook, Austin Daniels, or follow me on Twitter, underscore Austin space underscore. My pinned tweet is the current bracket. So just go on there. You can fill it. It's updated. And you can fill out Hey Arnold characters as well as any other season you may have missed. So good luck.
All right, man. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much. I love this tradition that we have here. It's always a pleasure to be on La Valley Sports Talk. And yeah, good luck to you this season, my friend.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the La Valley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please be sure to download, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Austin Space's Pointless 64 Hey Arnold edition. This is the season 4. Episode 1 is currently available. Episode 2 will be available for you on Monday. So be sure to fill out your brackets. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. And that is it. That's all I have for you this week. Hope you all be well. Stay safe. Enjoy the holiday weekend. And I'll talk to you all again soon.